Stay tuned for a Juno Afternoon. We'll learn about the UAS Certified Nurses Aid class with guest Suzanne Malter. We'll find out about next weekend's Family Fishing Day at the lake. That's at Twin Lakes. George Udermall will be here with details for this weekend's glass pickup at Sandy Beach. And Nancy DeCherney will be here for Arts Up. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more. That's next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A group of graduating New Mexico high school students are working to make positive changes in their communities. 105 seniors from Santa Fe Indian School received their diplomas Thursday. Eddie Humatiwa plans to pursue a career in environmental science and is headed to New Mexico Tech in the fall. The young man from San Felipe, Santo Domingo, and Santa Ana Pueblo says opportunities are needed to help Native students succeed.
It gives kids options, like the youth go into service or you stay home and work in the Pueblo. It's important to have these opportunities because you see what's out there, you see what you can be and how to get it, and it's important that we see the goals and the steps needed to get to where we want to go.
Providing opportunities for young Native people is the goal of the White House Initiative Generation Indigenous. Graduate Shayna Naranjo took part in Gen I.
I see that we need to continue this trend of making Indigenous youth leaders and molding them from a young age so that they understand issues. Like, one of the main issues that plagues my community is diabetes, and so one of the main factors is kind of to get the youth more active, and even the family members, from their grandmothers to their parents, all the way down to the little kids.
The Santa Clara Pueblo woman plans to go to Stanford and pursue a degree in education. First Lady Michelle Obama, who helped launch the initiative last year, traveled to Santa Fe to give the commencement address.
Through your senior honors projects, you've already become experts on urgent issues like addiction and poverty, education and economic development. And so many of you have already stepped up to implement your projects in your communities, hosting a fun run to raise awareness about domestic violence and diabetes, leading a traditional foods cooking demonstration, supporting seniors and teen parents, and doing so much more.
About 3,000 people filled the school gym for the ceremony, and an overflow area was open for another 1,000. Tribal leaders were in attendance, including Jicarilla Apache President Ty Vicente, who was proud of the valedictorian Emmanuel Vigil, a citizen of his tribe.
Education is the most important aspect of life that we know, and we highly promote it because higher education means a better way of life for not only the individual, but bringing that expertise back to the communities and enhancing the way of life in their communities is very important to us.
Santa Fe Indian School officials say about 95% of the 2016 graduating class will go on to college, including to Ivy League schools. The school boasts a more than 80% graduation rate. A federal judge in South Dakota has set a hearing date to reach a resolution in a lawsuit alleging violations of the Indian Child Welfare Act. Victoria Wicks has more.
In March 2015, Judge Jeffrey Viken found that the Seventh Circuit Court, the Pennington County State's Attorney, and the Department of Social Services violate ICWA and 14th Amendment due process rights. Those violations occur at hearings held within 48 hours after children have been removed from their homes. The judge found that the state did not allow parents to stage a defense or have an attorney appointed to represent them at that initial hearing, where children are frequently placed into foster care rather than returned home. Plaintiffs now say, in spite of Viken's ruling, those practices have not changed. ACLU attorney Stephen Pivar represents plaintiffs, which include the Rosebud and Oglala Sioux tribes.
We have submitted transcripts of more recent hearings, and as the judge noted, those hearings are still being held in a manner that the judge found to be unconstitutional.
At the status hearing, Judge Viken said he would prefer that the federal court not intervene in the workings of state courts and Department of Social Services, but he found serious constitutional violations that need to be remedied. He said that defendants are apparently not going to make changes voluntarily, so he set a hearing for August 17th to craft a specific injunction. I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by the year-long celebration of Native American artist Lloyd Kiva New at the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture, the IAIA Museum of Contemporary Native Arts, and the New Mexico Museum of Art. Info at nmculture.org/LKN.
If you or a loved one suffer from alcohol addiction, hear how recovery is possible from those who've had their day one at nativenews.net.
Native Voice One. The Native American Radio Service.
And welcome to a Juneau Afternoon. I'm Laurie Scandling with our producer Jeff Brown in the studio. I have several guests here with me this afternoon. It's a pleasure to welcome Suzanne Malter. She has taught 14 semesters of the Certified Nurses Aid program with UAS. This is an intensive summer program. And three of her graduates, Heather Page and Vin Lee and Cheyenne Severly. Each of them work at different places in our town using their skills that they gained as certified nurse aid graduates. Welcome. Very glad to have you here. And we find CNAs everywhere in our community, and I know the graduates of our local program work at Rainforest Recovery, Cornerstone Home Health Care, Reach, Search, Bartlett, and various clinics around the town. So I'd like to hear about the course, Suzanne. It sounds intensive, 4 days a week in June and 5 days a week in July, and this begins June 6th. What should people know? I know there are only a couple of spots left, so what should folks know about getting enrolled in the program if they're interested?
Okay, thank you for having us on, Lori. It's really great to be here. The course begins on the 6th of June. It takes a couple days to apply for the course, so we wanted to let the community know that there's still a couple seats left in the summer course, and it involves potential students need to have cursory physicals, PPD tests, criminal background checks, and they need to take an ACCUPLACE or English placement test at the university and submit an application. But it really can happen within a couple days. Clinics in town have been so good about getting our students in for physicals because they know that they need it for this class. It's just a really not a big deal physical, but it will take a couple days. The application can be found online at UAS, can be picked up down at the Tech Center where the beautiful new nursing lab is, and our offices are. Health Sciences program is located down at the Tech, which is across from Juneau Douglas High School. And I just would love to have a full class. It's a very fun class, fast moving. In the fall and the spring, this class is 14 weeks long. In the summer, we put the students through the course in just a little over 6 weeks. It's 175 hours. So,
but you're done.
But they're finished, and then they're out working.
But there is a statewide exam. Is that right?
There is. The students will sit for their state exam the middle of August. We have a proctor that will administer a written exam and a skills exam. But these exams are very similar to the exams that we give for the course itself. It's a 9-credit course. They get a lot of practice, and I'm sure the students that are here with me in the studio can share that they were very well prepared when they did sit for the exam.
I see Cheyenne nodding her head. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. And Cheyenne is the most recent graduate of amongst the three who are here and is currently working as a CNA at Search. Cheyenne, tell me what you liked about the program and what made you decide to go into healthcare. It is the fastest growing field, yeah, and I bet you were employed instantly. Mm-hmm. But talk about your decision to do it and what you liked about it, mm-hmm, and perhaps what you found challenging, yeah, as well.
So I am a CNA, but I'm actually not going into the field of nursing. I mean, I think that's one of the things I liked about the CNA class. It doesn't just have to be for nurses. I'm actually looking to go into physical therapy. And so that is my focus at Search. But what I found in the CNA class, it has a big focus on patient care, which I really liked, and just how to treat patients and how to connect with them. And so that was probably one of my favorite things about the class. And it's just really nice how fast-paced it is, and it is accelerated, and you're not losing anything with it only being a six-week class. But it does require you to just I was working at Search last summer as well as doing the class, but it requires a lot of attention to it, but it is a lot of fun, so it's not that hard.
It sounds like you got a lot of hands-on experience.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a difference then.
Yep.
And can the credits you earn in this field be applicable to a four-year degree then as well?
Yep. Yeah, they are going to my they transferred over to UAS for me, and then they're transferring to another university that I'm going to study kinesiology at. So, yeah.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Then let's talk about your decision to enter the CNA program and what you particularly liked about it. You've been employed at Bartlett, I think, since close to graduation. Is that right?
Well, I actually was working at Wildfire Court first for about 2 years after I graduated, and then I've been at Bartlett for about a year now. But one of the smartest decisions I've ever made in my life was to take that CNA class, because I do want to go into nursing, but I didn't know, you know, fresh out of high school, I didn't know how to do that. And someone told me about the CNA class, and it was a great first, kind of like what Cheyenne said, the first step into the nursing field.
So it gave you a chance to know, do I even like this field? Because there is a lot of hands-on care involved.
It is. And just from my 3 years of experience working in the medical field, I've learned that as a CNA, patient care, even I've worked long-term in acute care, and it's just the one thing that patients really care about is having a medical profession that really care for them. And that's something I've learned that was one of the most important things in my CNA class. I've had patients who said that some healthcare provider they've seen are just so busy that they don't have time to really listen to the patient. And that's something that we're taught to do in the CNA class, is just really listen to the patient and what their needs are and care for them.
I think you really zeroed in on something that anybody who's been a patient, and probably each one of us has, that's what resonates and that's what sticks with you. You want to believe that person knows what they're doing. But ultimately, it's how they treat you when you're in a vulnerable situation that, you know, really matters. So are you moving on to nursing school then, Vin?
Yeah. I got accepted into the School of Nursing up in Anchorage, and I will be starting nursing school August 2017. And, yeah, just the experience I've gained from nursing or from being a CNA, everybody that I've talked to said will give me a heads up when I start nursing school.
So you mentioned, you know, I graduated from high school, I didn't know how to go into nursing school, and then I heard about this program. So coincidentally, this weekend is graduation. What would you say to somebody who's not quite clear on what they'd like to do, and they're finishing high school right now?
My advice for them would be, you know, don't stress out too much about it. Especially just since you just graduated high school, take a little time, have a little fun, but do try to figure out what you like to do and where you want to go. For me, I just really like caring for people, and so that's why I decided to go into kind of the health profession. And, you know, I initially was a biology major when I started college, but I just didn't feel like biology was the way I wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so somebody suggested try the CNA course and see if you like that. And instantly I just loved it and hasn't just been taken off since then.
It fit.
Yep.
It fit. Suzanne, what should students expect to take an intensive program where you earn 9 credits in just a few weeks? What should students who are accepted be prepared to tackle?
There's a fair amount of reading that is required. There are quite a few assignments and reflections that have to be turned in, online quizzes. But most, this is my fourth summer teaching this class,
And it's unusual that my students don't also have part-time jobs. So we spend a lot of time in class talking about the theory of what they're doing. We practice in the skills lab. There's 22 skills that the students master during the class. And then six full days are spent working either at Wildflower Court or Pioneer's Home. The students get experiences at both, actually working with CNAs as mentors and taking care of people. So it's a lot of hours. I tell the students it's kind of like a job. It's a job for them. But so many of them also have part-time work in the summer. And so they're able to really to manage the workload along with part-time work and do well. We have a great program. We're really quite proud of our program because we prepare the students, and we have a very high pass rate for the state exam. And it's really because we get great students, and we spend a lot of time talking about the theory that they're learning and being a healthcare provider. This course is great. As Cheyenne said, it's not just for folks going to nursing school. We have students that go to physical therapy. Students, I have a student that is beginning medical school in the fall. We have rad tech students. Any of the allied health fields would benefit from this experience. I've had students that midlife have thought about changing their careers, and they work for a year or two as a CNA, and they decide they're going to go back to their original career. So I think it really helps people to have real experience in taking care of patients and clients and residents and individuals, whatever. It helps clarify what it is they want to do. So it's really quite a fun class because it's hands-on. It's not just your brain that's working. You're physically working. You're taking care of each other. You give baths to each other. You give each other foot care and nail care, and you help people walk. You do range of motion. You practice on each other in the class. It makes for a very dynamic learning environment, I think.
How many hours a day? It's 4 days a week in June, 5 days a week in July. How many hours a day are the classes?
It's 6 hours in June and 5 hours in July. But there's an hour break for lunch, so really it's like 7 and 6. And then clinic days are 6 in the morning until 2:30, so they're 8-hour days, the 6 days that we're in clinic.
So it sounds challenging, but something that can prepare you very well to pass the state certification exam and then get a job. I see Cheyenne nodding her head, mm-hmm. Yes, and then get a job.
That's such a good point, and I think the students could probably speak to the fact that the class is like a job, but it does prepare them to work in a team, in a healthcare team,
which
you
is
did
what
with
will
your
be
classmates,
expected.
And show up on time, and do the work.
Suzanne, how much is the tuition for the program? Do you have a ballpark of that? And is there financial aid available?
I do have the tuition. And it's quite steep because it's 9 credits. I think that this is the one class at the university that is the most credits that you could actually take. I don't think we have any other classes that are offered at UAS that are 9 credits. So it sounds like a lot, and it is a lot. It's around $3,000
okay.
for the class and to apply with the Board of Nursing to sit for the exam, the textbook,
sure.
Everything.
I would imagine the Alaska State Student Loan Program.
UA Scholars will pay for the tuition. Department of Labor pays. Welfare Court sponsors students. Job Center sponsors students. CERC has sponsored students. Center for Community. I've had Pioneer Home has sponsored students in the past as well.
Do you have a phone number where folks who would like more information could give you a call?
Yes, 321-0949. Is my number, and please call me.
Okay. We are talking with Suzanne Malter. She is the summer instructor of the Certified Nurses Program with UAS. This is an intensive program, that prepares you to take the statewide exam, and we welcomed some guests here today who were graduates and were immediately hired, and they're moving on in their education in the health field. I want to thank them and Suzanne for being here. The course starts June 6th, and please call Suzanne if you have questions at 321-0949. Thank you all for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Lori.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 27th of May, 2016. It's the birthday of John Cheever, Quincy, Massachusetts, 1912. Lived in Ossining, suburb of New York, Westchester County. Wrote stories, as he said, of a long-lost world when the city of New York was still filled with a river light, when you heard the Benny Goodman quartets from a radio in the corner stationery store, and when almost everybody wore a hat. Cheever said the task of an American writer is not to describe the misgivings of a woman taken in adultery as she looks out of a window at the rain, but to describe 400 people under the lights reaching for a foul ball. This is ceremony. It's the birthday of Rachel Carson, born Pennsylvania, 1907, author of Silent Spring, one of the most influential books in the environmental movement. It's the birthday of Julia Ward Howe, New York City, 1819, the woman who wrote, "I have seen him in the watchfires of 100 circling camps. They have builded him an altar in the evening dews and damps. He hath sounded forth a trumpet that shall never call retreat. He is sifting out the souls of men around his judgment seat. Battle hymn of the Republic." She was on a trip to Washington, D.C., 1861, with her husband, and she heard army troops singing a marching song, "John Brown's Body," and she wrote the new lyrics to the tune. Became popular among the soldiers, and it was a favorite song of Abraham Lincoln, who shed tears the first time he heard it. Julia Ward Howe later established Mother's Day, which she envisioned as a day on which mothers from around the world would meet to discuss world peace. And it's the birthday of the poet Linda Paston, born in the Bronx, 1932, went off to Radcliffe, a classmate of Sylvia Plath, married young, had three children, stopped writing for 10 years, and resumed when her children went off to school. Her first collection, A Perfect Circle of Sun, came out in 1971. Here's a poem for today by Linda Paston, After an Absence. After an absence that was no one's fault, we are shy with each other, and our words seem younger than we are, as if we must return to the time we met and work ourselves back to the present, the way you never read a story from the place you stopped, but always start each book all over again. Perhaps we should have stayed tied like mountain climbers by the safe cord of the phone, its dial, our own small prayer wheel, our voices less ghostly across the miles, less awkward than they are now. I had forgotten the gray in your curls, that splash of winter over your face, remembering the younger man you used to be. And I feel myself turn old and ordinary, having to think again of food for supper, the animals to be tended, the whole riptide of daily life hidden but perilous, pulling both of us under so fast. I have dreamed of our bed as if it were a shore where we would be washed up, not this striped mattress we must cover with sheets. I had forgotten all the old business between us, like mail unanswered so long that silence becomes eloquent, a message of its own. I had even forgotten how married love is a territory more mysterious the more it is explored, like one of those terrains you read about, a garden in the desert where you stoop to drink, never knowing if your mouth will fill with water or sand. A poem by Linda Paston, After an Absence, from The Imperfect Paradise, published by W.W. Norton and Company, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes store or listen at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Alaskans lose over 600 loved ones each year to tobacco use. That's almost two people every single day. We can change the story, but it takes all of us. Change begins at home. This year on May 31st, World No Tobacco Day, celebrate health by quitting tobacco or helping a loved one make that choice. For help to quit tobacco, call Alaska's Tobacco Quitline at 1-800-QUIT-NOW. This message is brought to you by the Partnership for a Tobacco-Free Southeast and Search.
Welcome back to a Juneau Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling. With me in the studio is Barb Adams from the U.S. Forest Service, David Love from Fish and Game, and Abby Lowell, who's also with Fish and Game, but representing the Juneau-Gastineau Rotary Club. I always clarify, there are three. Juneau-Gastineau Rotary is one of those, and they are some of the many, many, many partners that for more than 25 years have sponsored Family Fishing Day at the Lake, which is a week from tomorrow. So, David, let's start with Fish and Game. What are folks invited to do at Twin Lakes?
So we'd like families to come out, bring their kids, and enjoy some fishing. We will provide rods and bait and advice and assist Forest Service with rowboats and life jackets and just basically give kids and families a chance to catch some of the king salmon that were stocked in Twin Lakes 2 weeks ago.
Oh, I was going to say, when did that happen? So 2 weeks ago.
It was about 2 weeks ago, and 8,000 king salmon were stocked.
How many of them are like 35 pounds?
None of them.
Oh, okay.
But
they're child size. Fun size.
They are fun size. They're pan size, if you will. And there were a few less this year than last year, but they're bigger. So they're going to be 8 to 9 inches. So should be fun for the kids. And hopefully we'll see a good catch rate.
Thanks to Fish and Game and DIPAC for providing that. Barb, what is the the Forest Service role? I know many agencies as well as businesses contribute to this. What does the Forest Service provide?
Well, what we provide is we provide rowboats for kids to go out and fish on the lake itself instead of just from the shoreline. We also provide some people to go out and fish, like row the kids out. If a parent's not as comfortable rowing with a rowboat or something like that, we certainly provide that. We will put kids in the life jackets, make sure that they're nice and safe, and make sure that there are life jackets available for the adults, too, if they wanted to go out with their children. And we're also going to provide some fish print station out there. So for the kids that maybe get tired of fishing or something like that, they can have a fun activity to go do with our fish prints that we provide. And at the end of the day, they can come in, they can do, you know, almost as many as they want. And basically get to take those home at the end of the day and put those up on their refrigerator for their parents to enjoy for the rest of the week.
I've seen kids running around with those the various years that I have worked at Family Fishing Day at the lake. And what's amazing to me is that all equipment is provided. Families can show up. It's free. They need not bring anything. Although I should pause and ask David, do kids have to have a fishing license, or who does?
So kids that are under 16 do not need to have a fishing license. If you're 16 or older, you need a license to fish. Families can help their kids fish. They can't actually cast the rods, but the kids will do that themselves. And every year we have kids get very interested actually in our cleaning station, and they learn about some of the anatomy of the fish and really enjoy that. It's a good learning experience.
So as long as the fisher is under 16, no license is needed. This really can be free. Abby, what does our Rotary Club do for this event and at this event?
Sure. Thanks, Lori. Well, since 1991, we teamed up with Fish and Game, and at that point it was the Territorial Sportsmen who for putting on the event. And basically, we're the food folks and the game folks. We provide concessions, which include hot dogs and beverages and chips and for just, you know, a small charge. And also games with prizes for the kids. Everybody can win a prize, as well as some coupons to local retailers around town. And, you know, I think we're just really out there because we enjoy it, and it's a great way to give service back to the community, which is what Rotary does. We're all about giving back. And, you know, it's not exactly a fundraiser, but we do make a little bit of funds, and those go to support some of our other projects around town, which include, you know, a new kitchen at Zach Gordon, Riverbend Elementary, new playground equipment, a covered shelter out of the Arboretum, Glory Hole Meals. It kind of goes on and on. But, you know, we really couldn't be there without support from all of the some other businesses around town that support us. And I should really give a shout out to those folks. And that includes Odom Corp, Northern Sales, Super Bear, which has been really generous for a really long time. They donate 600 hot dogs and buns every year. So it's just really awesome. Flying Squirrel, Heritage Coffee, City and Borough of Juneau and the Juneau School District, Barron's Mechanical, Stanley Ford, and Jared Lee Dental. And, of course, we have lots of volunteers out there just ready to make it a great time for all the families and kids that show up. And, yeah, I really encourage people to come on down, stay the whole day, or just come for an hour. Everybody's guaranteed to smile.
Yeah, if you have a couple of kids and one is not into the fishing, I was glad that Barb mentioned the Fish Prince. And then some of the games that the Rotary Club offers include, you know, physical activities that are appropriate for small children, mm-hmm. and they get a little prize. Those are all free. And then the Juneau Public Library, I think, is setting up a storyboard. And I heard that DIPAC is interested in doing some educational activities. So every kid is different. And we have, I know there will be a variety of games, not just the Fish Prince, but the Fish Prince and several other things. David, do you keep track of how many folks participate every year? It seems very busy, but I'm never quite sure of the total.
So we don't actually count the number of people who are there, but we do keep track of the number of rods that we, fishing poles that we loan out. And last year it was it was close to 400. So at any one time there's a couple hundred poles on the lake, and people are we provide all that, all the bait and hooks and advice, and rig those up for people to go out and fish.
Do folks, and any of you can answer this, is there anything special they should wear or bring or be sure to have with them to be safe or appropriately dressed?
So they won't need life jackets for the boats. We'll provide those. But this will happen rain or shine. So dress for the weather. If it's rainy and cold, make sure you wear appropriate layers. And other than that, we'll provide the fishing gear.
And if it is cold, the Rotary Club will be offering some more beverages. So come by and see us
for
as well.
For free. Coffee and cocoa for free. Always a popular station, isn't it?
Hard to beat free.
Well, thanks for joining us today. We're talking about the Family Fishing Day at the Lake. This is the 27th year that Fish and Game and other agencies, including Territorial Sportsmen and the Coast Guard Auxiliary, have teamed up to provide a free and gear-filled opportunity for families at Twin Lakes. It'll be a week from tomorrow, so that's June 4th. David, how early can folks show up to fish?
So it starts at 10 o'clock and it goes till 3.
So. And Abby, will food be available that whole time?
I believe food shows up at 10, yeah.
Have a hot dog at 10. Well, thank you for joining us, and appreciate you talking about this family-friendly opportunity.
This is Bird Note. In 2014, on the Olympic Peninsula in Washington State, the dams on the Elwha River were removed. It was the largest removal of its kind in history. As the river ran free again, salmon from the Pacific were able to spawn upstream for the first time in 100 years, having a dramatic impact on American dippers, lively little riverside birds. Biologists with the Lower Elwha Clallam Tribe, the Smithsonian Migratory Bird Center, and Ohio State University drew small samples of blood from dippers that they then released unharmed. Analysis of blood and feathers showed that birds with access to salmon have higher survival rates, and the females have better body condition than those with no access to the fish. These dippers are also much more likely to stay on their home territories rather than expend energy to forage widely. And they're 20 times more likely to attempt raising two broods in a season, the most important contributor to population growth. So nutrients from spawned out salmon and salmon eggs are giving the river's ecosystem new vitality. Today's show is brought to you by Forterra, creating vibrant communities and conserving great lands in Washington State. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann.
Join us for Below the Surface, diving deep into the science of maritime change in the Arctic, June 1st at K2 at 5 p.m. Scientists from NOAA, UAF, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will share findings and thoughts on 2 years of unprecedented research in the Northern Bering and Chukchi Seas. See images and video of their explorations and check out some of the gear used in their surveys. This program will be recorded for broadcast. Again, that's a discussion on maritime changes in the Arctic, Wednesday, June 1st at 5 at KTOO.
Glad to have you with us on a continuing Juno afternoon on this lovely Friday. This will be a wonderful weekend for the many activities that always are going on in our community. And one of those is a very special one that will be happening out the road. I'm with Patty Hutchins-Jupe. She is an artist. And I want you to talk about, first of all, what kind of artist are you, Patty, and why has the last 2 weeks been particularly special for you?
I'm a painter predominantly, visual artist. I do some sculpture as well, but predominantly I paint in oil. And the past 2 weeks, I have been out at the Greening Cabin out in Malaga Harbor, and as part of an artist in residency that is sponsored by the state of Alaska, and you apply, you know, early on in the season and get chosen. It's a, like a grant process that you go through. So I was very fortunate to be chosen to be out there these 2 weeks. I went out there last summer and visited, and it was a spectacular spot. So the whole idea of being able to be in that spot and to be able to paint and do my artwork for 2 weeks, I couldn't just resist trying to get that chance, and I got it.
It is a lovely, lovely site. The historical cabin is still there that belonged to former Senator Ernest Greening. So what is happening this weekend? Will you be having kind of a miniature show or open house?
Well, kind of all of that. As part of the requirement for being there as an artist, you have certain requirements that you have to do, is to do something for the public. So I thought in the morning I would first have an open house at the cabin, because so many people go by and they're inquisitive. They haven't seen the inside, or, you know, they're familiar with the area. So they want to come in and look around. So in the morning, starting at 10, 10:30, I'm just going to have an open house so people can come in and just see what it's about. And I can tell them about the cabin and how it originated and how it's being used as an artist residency in the summers. And then after that, after noontime, I'm going to do an artist workshop. And that's open to anybody that's interested in art. They don't have to be an accomplished artist or anything. And we're going to talk about some of the techniques that I've used in my oil paintings, particularly there at the cabin, doing a lot of seascape landscapes, looking out on that beautiful scene across the inlet there, and just working on perspective and color values and things like that. So even if you're a beginner, I can give you some tips on how to paint these lovely scenes that surround us everywhere here in Juneau. And I hope artists come out, and non-artists. There may be people that come out for open house in the morning, want to stick around, pack a picnic. There's a beautiful picnic spot right outside the door.
It is lovely.
Beautiful lake. It is. There's just everything there, whales, everything.
Patty, what was your greatest challenge painting, as you say, the seascapes? What was maybe something that was unexpected as an artist as you try to portray perhaps the changing light, or
that is a big thing, because, you know, you look out here, and if you watch the water for any length of time, it changes color continually. So I knew that, I kind of knew that was going to be a problem. Unexpectedly, the only problem I really had was the whales.
In what way?
In that they interrupted me.
They were quite distracting.
Yes, they were. You know, the first 2 days was very hard to paint. I just had to turn around, stare out the window because they were right there, right against the rocks, right in front of the cabin, and have been since I've been there.
Must be some herring there or some good food.
Well, it's the Dipak fish from the pens. They're hanging around. But, you know, for painting, yeah, the changing colors, I couldn't get outside as much as I thought I was going to be because the no-see-ums were out quite heavily, unless there was a breeze. So that was the only glitch I had. I went out there with some goals in mind to work on my, I'm doing a theme of paintings on the intertidal zone. And Imelga Harbor is a great one with the salt chunk and the backflow,
the
tides,
there.
And the beautiful scenery there that's involved with that intertidal zone. So I've managed to get 7 paintings pretty well done.
And were they all plein air where you're outside?
No. Because the no-see-ums kept me from doing that. So, you know, I'd go out and look. I'd go out and do my color values where the light was appropriate and real so I could get the color of the rocks or the color of the water, the color of the clouds. Then I'd take pictures with a little pad of that area, and then I go back in the cabin and sit by the big windows there and paint there. So it wasn't all plein air. Mostly because of bugs.
Understandable. Now, Patty, if somebody wants to come to the workshop tomorrow at noon, how long should they expect to be there, and do they need to bring anything special?
If they have, you know, some paper or a canvas in their paints, they can bring that. I'll have some paper. We're going to work on some things, you know, non-artists can easily do. And proportions, that type of stuff, you know, because you look out across the inlet and you've got bays and headlands and bays and headlands, so we're going to do some proportion work there to try to make, I paint realistically, so try to make paintings accurate in that form. You know, if they could bring their art supplies and they want to paint outside, I think it's still going to be nice, and there's a breeze today, so there's no bugs today.
Lovely. How long do you think the workshop will last?
Probably an hour and a half, two hours. Not very long.
Okay.
But,
and is there a phone number where someone could call you if they'd like to know more about it? Do you get phone service out the road there?
Sometimes.
Okay.
In the morning and the evening, actually. When the satellites align, I think I get some. I'm only in one spot in the cabin. But if they go to the Alaska State Parks website, it is on the website with all the information they need to know and times. That's all on
their
website.
They just need to look for the Greening Cabin. And
greening
that's
cabin.
G-R-U-E-N-I-N-G.
Yes, and they say greening.
They do. Well, Patty, thank you for dropping by. We're talking
thank
with
you.
Patty Hutchins-Jupe. She is an oil painter, a visual artist who had a 2-week residency at the historic Greening Cabin, which is near Imelga Harbor. You turn on the Imelga Harbor Road and look to the right. There is a sign. She's hosting an open house tomorrow morning so folks can see this beautiful location and the house. And from noon on for a couple of hours, she will also host an artist workshop. But you need not be an artist to attend. And it sounds like everything's free.
It is all free, and people should take advantage of it. I mean, we all own that place now. It belongs to the state, so it should
That's
come out
point.
And take ownership of it.
Well, thank you so much for dropping by.
Thank you.
Continuing with the Juno afternoon on this lovely afternoon, with me is George Utermall, and he's going to share with us information about an effort to collect glass on Sandy Beach. George, how did you get involved with this? Why do you care?
Grateful Dogs has been involved in this pickup of broken glass on Sandy Beach for the last 8 years. It's something that's kind of been very noticeable if you spend any time on the beach at all about the amount of glass that is actually on the beach. I mean, it's a broken glass, and it poses a hazard to both people who have their barefoot, all the children running out playing in the water in the summertime, and also the dogs year-round.
I have to back up. What is Grateful Dogs?
Grateful Dogs is a local membership organization established about 10, 12 years ago. It's an advocacy organization on behalf of responsible dog owners, and advocates to dog owners to be responsible dog owners.
How many folks are active in that organization?
We have about 30 paid members at the present time. We have quite a large following on Facebook also.
And are you a walker of dogs down at Sandy Beach?
Yes, I am.
So what should folks expect when they show up? Do they need to bring a grocery sack to put the glass in? And what time would you like people to be there?
The organized pickup will start around 10 o'clock and it'll continue on until noon. And just come on down and just take a leisurely walk on the beach and just paying particular attention to the glass that you might find on the beach. Just bring a small plastic bag, maybe something like a doggy bag would be fine, or maybe just a small 1-quart, 2-quart, even a gallon bucket just to carry your glasses that you might find on the beach.
Probably safer to have a bucket than perhaps a grocery sack, now that you mentioned that. Is Sandy Beach more dangerous than other beaches?
There appears to be, for some reason, more glass on the beach that's more readily available. I think some of the more rocky beaches and the gravel beaches in town have more ability to kind of grind the glass that gets there and grinds it up into more of what you find as beach glass. But I think due to the history of Sandy Beach as being a long-time developed area and site of the former mine, and having that large living area, the residential area and commercial area and mining area right above the beach, there's just a lot of glass over time has accumulated down in those sands.
So this isn't necessarily from people being irresponsible who are picnicking there now. This has some history to it, it sounds like.
Yes, as you go, if you're picked up much glass there, it's obvious that most of the glass you're going to pick up is going to be the older glass. I mean, it's obviously thicker. It's not like you can, when you pick up a modern beer bottle, a broken beer bottle, you can tell by the thickness of the glass that it's a newer piece of glass. And there's just a lot of the old glass down there. And it's supposedly the edges aren't so sharp, but there's a lot of points. And so you step on it. It poses a real hazard to people and dogs. And you will get some of the broken glass, more modern stuff, along the tide line and some of the fire pits there. Some irresponsible people insist on kind of breaking their bottles into the fire as they leave in the evening. So those fire pits are always a hazard. But that's pretty much confined to the tide line there. And it's easier to spot than some of the glass that's kind of dispersed very widely over the beach.
I didn't realize that it was an issue, but I know that Sandy Beach has a lot of foot traffic and animal traffic. Are there other beaches that the Grateful Dogs focus on?
Not for this particular issue of broken glass, because it doesn't seem to have risen much in anywhere else in the community. But we are interested in kind of just access to beaches and make sure that dogs have access to beaches and that the dogs are responsible and their owners are responsible users of the resources when we're out there on the beaches.
Sure. If you're a dog owner or somebody who cares about the ability of dogs and those who own them to access Sandy Beach, there is tomorrow a glass cleanup beginning at 10 o'clock at Sandy Beach. Bring a bucket, and it sounds like people probably should wear some gloves, too, to be safe.
Gloves, if you feel more comfortable wearing gloves, certainly that's the case. In all the years that I've been doing it, I've only been cut once by picking up a piece of glass, and that was a freshly broken vodka bottle that was broken the night before. And that glass, that newer glass, freshly broken glass, has much sharper edges than glass that's been out there weathered for a while.
George, is there a website for Grateful Dogs or a phone number somebody could call if they want to know more about this?
Certainly. There's our website is gratefuldogsofjuno.org. We're all available on Facebook at Grateful Dogs of Juno. And also, if somebody would like to contact us, our phone number is 586-3849.
That's 586-3849. We're clearing Sandy Beach of glass. Thank you for heading this up. That sounds like something important but invisible. So I hope you get a good crew tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
Glass Onion. Thank you, Jeff. I love the music that he picks. Well, we are concluding this afternoon's Juno Afternoon with a typically Thursday segment, and that is one of my very favorite. It's with Nancy DeTourney of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, and she does a highlighting of what's up and what's ahead. And there is always a list that's
a
mile now. Talk about where folks can find the list if we don't get through everything.
You can go on to our website, which is jahc.org, and look for the community calendar, or you can go to ktoo.org. Calendar is the same. So, and you can send us things to put on the calendar at info@jahc.org, and we'll put them up there for you. So, then
Coming up in the next week?
Well, goodness sakes, there's some things happening up in Skagway. Too late, you're not there yet, but the Northwards
Writer Symposium.
Yeah, wonderful
right.
thing going on all weekend up there. Juno tonight, the Juno Dance Theater's Spring Showcase. I don't know if y'all have been talking about that. Juno Dance Theater got the rights to do a George Balanchine perform a choreography.
That's a big deal.
It's a big deal. It's a big deal. They don't give it to just anybody, and usually they send somebody from the Balanchine whatever estate to come and make sure we're doing it right. They trust our folks so much that they're not doing that, and so this is a real opportunity. You can see it tonight at 7, tomorrow at 2, and then again tomorrow at 7 p.m. And in addition, they did their Juno's Got Talent thing this is the first one they ever did. And Jocelyn Miles, who's a fabulous singer, won. And the deal was that whoever won was going to get to perform with this showcase. So not only do you get to see that, but you get to hear Jocelyn, too. So it's a great opportunity.
Where will that be, Nancy?
That will be at JDHS. So go on down there at 7 p.m., 2 p.m., and 7 p.m. Right. This is your last weekend to see Annapurna. I always warn people about that. And then suddenly it shows up.
And then it's done, yeah.
And then it's done.
Get there.
And you know, they're starting to get their season tickets on sale for the coming season. So get there, too. You have to call them directly, 364-24-21. 21, yeah.
Okay.
Something like that. I remember it usually. Salt After Dark on Friday night at 10 p.m.
What is
at
that?
Salt. I don't exactly, but they do it at Salt. And
they turn off the lights.
And it's, I think, DJ Manu plays music and stuff, and it's a lot of fun. At 9, well, you were just talking about the glass pickup with the dogs, which is a great, it's going to be a beautiful day to be out on the beach doing something fun with your dog.
And that starts at 9. Is that what George said?
I think he said 10.
Okay.
I wrote down 10, but
I think
I
that's
could be
right.
Wrong. There is out at the Greening Cabin at Amalga Harbor, there is Patty Hutchins Jupe.
We just talked with her a moment ago, and she talked about how hard it will be to leave the Greening Cabin after her 2-week residency.
Yes.
And she's going to offer a free workshop in the afternoon from about noon to 2 for anybody.
Can't think of a better place to spend the afternoon.
She was mentioning that it was very hard to focus when the whales were right out the door.
Yes, she did.
The risks of beautiful Alaska.
Yes. So let's see. We've got the Juno Douglas City Museum offering their historical walking tour on Saturday.
Oh.
There is...
Where does that go? Do you know?
It sort of is in about a six-block area. You leave from the City Museum and wander up around it into Fifth Street. They have a little map online. And you end up at the Capital City Bed and Breakfast for a little tea and crumpets kind of thing. It's kind of nice.
Historical walk. Is that free?
Mm-hmm. I don't believe so. I believe you pay money for that, but you can get those tickets either on our website or by going right to the museum.
And that starts what time? 10 o'clock?
Two.
Oh, mm-hmm. Afternoon. 2 o'clock for the historical walk with the City Museum folks.
Yep. And then on Sunday, there is a House of Wickersham free tour at 10 a.m. in the morning. And we do our walking tours. We're doing art tours. Everybody is doing guided tours. We have a guided art walk on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And it's usually Dan Hobson or Deb Rudis or I think Christina Apathy is going to do them. So it's guided by artists. And it's amazing how many things there are in the downtown area. Get some history of Juno and learn about all the artwork. It's amazing.
So the art walk is Sunday through Thursday. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Is it the same time every day?
1 o'clock. You leave from that kiosk that's by the museum library downtown.
Okay.
And then you end up at the Jack and have a little tea and crumpets there.
How long does that last?
It depends on the people. Dan has gone anywhere from a half hour to I think the
three
other
and a half
day,
days.
Three and a half. Yes, exactly.
And now we have.
Yes, because there is a lot to do, and it kind of depends on people's energy levels and whether you like to do the uphills, whether it's raining, you know. So he tailors it to whatever you're going to do. And I'm going to tell you, we do charge for this. It's $20, but if you're listening to me right here and now, you can call over there and say that you got the Nancy $10 off. So you can call and do that, and we want to – I mean,
that's
local people who've been on this have been blown away, so – it's not just for the visitors, but it is a good thing if you have visitors in town and you need something to do for the afternoon. You can send them on one of these, our tour or the city.
So they can call the Jack right now
and get
$10 off?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, do it.
What time is the tour of the House of Wickersham on
that
Sunday?
That is at 10 a.m.
I have
Sunday.
To say, I volunteered there some years ago when Judge Wickersham's niece was working there.
Oh, I remember that.
And
that was a while back.
Ruth Allman.
Yes.
And it is fascinating history in a beautiful home.
Yes, so try to do that. So let's see, on Sunday, I think there's also international folk dancing at the Alaska Club.
Always,
6 o'clock. There's karaoke at Suite 907 at 9. On Monday, the Wickersham House is also open at 10 a.m., and there's a makerspace open out at Anka Street, which is an opportunity to find out more about that. So I just won't tell you what it is. You have to go. It's at 6 o'clock, and it's on Anka Street.
6 p.m. Monday?
Yeah, 6 to 8. And
for
if you
makerspace.
Like to use power tools, this is the place for you. So let's see. What else do we want to talk about? There's a volunteer marching band. It's starting to be the 4th of July, so they're starting to rehearse for the marching band. If you like band music and you want to play in the band, I think they'll take you.
I love that part of the parade. I really do. So
yes.
The volunteer marching band, when is the practice?
That is on Wednesday at 6 p.m. at Faith Lutheran Church out in the valley. So that kind of sums it. Oh, let's see. There's a weekly old-time music jam at the Alaskan on Wednesday at 7 p.m.
7 o'clock for the old-time jam on Wednesdays, and that's upstairs at the Alaskan.
Yeah, and that, you know, it seems like we're sort of in a little breather moment right now, but things are picking up because it's summertime, and we're going to start our block parties, and the museum is going to open, and all kinds of things are going to happen.
There's never not anything to do in Juneau.
Yeah.
Taking a quick look at the weather, partly cloudy for the next couple of days, but I love to say partly cloudy also means partly sunny. So enjoy your weekend. Thanks for joining me, Lori Scandling, on a Juneau afternoon, and thanks to our producer, Jeff Brown.